Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitter machine. And back for a second time while Cousin Shane's living it up in Orlando on vacation is our good friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor, Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
Mike, I'm doing well. It's good to talk to you again. Second time this week, filling in for the great Cousin Shane. It is a little hard to believe it is National Signing Day. Like you, I'm sort of like wistful for the days of, early to late at night, nonstop recruiting action. So where's the off season these days in college football, right?
Yeah, it feels like we're in regular season, getting you twice on the show this week. So thank you, Stephen, for helping us. And hey, shout out real quick. Cousin Jack says he's been going through some stuff, so just want to say, Jack, he said we really helped him get through a tough time of year, so we appreciate you, Cousin Jack. Hope you're feeling better, and we love you too, buddy, so keep being strong for us. And Stephen, oh man, you better believe we're gonna have some questions about your quarterback rankings. So this is an SEC mailbag edition of the show. Obviously no Cousin Shane, so I'm very interested to see how Stephen kind of mixes it up with some of his. We always get a lot of food questions, Stephen. So buckle up. It's mostly SEC football questions, but plenty of food questions as well. And before we get to that, though, shout out Stephen. We can't have Stephen on the show and him not to do some research and some data and some analytics, so to speak. Stephen has got us together a look now that it is National Signing Day. I mean, I didn't even realize it was National Signing Day until Stephen told us on Monday that it was going to be signing day. But he's put together a list of the last, 5 years of talent acquisition across the SEC. Can you explain it for us, Stephen?
Yeah, so reason why that I'm interested in doing this every year is it just gives you a sort of baseline of the roster talent in college football. You know, CBS 24/7, they do the blue chip ratio. This is just to try to give fans a snapshot of every year taking the recruiting rankings over 5 years, add those totals up, average them out, and see where the teams come out nationally and within the conference. And so the reason why I was so interested in doing this is, you know, kind of like every preseason, we're debating strength of roster, debating like, you know, the blue chip ratio and things like that. It just gives you kind of a good snapshot of just where the talent is in the sport. Not a ton of surprises, but it's just nice to kind of see it in the data.
Well, speaking of being awesome real quick here, Stephen, Cousin JR, what a guy. Back again. Yep. I mean, we can't have a show without JR donating a membership. Thank you, Cousin JR. This time it's Cousin Drew has been gifted a membership. Thanks to Cousin JR. Cousin Drew, welcome to the family. Again, thank you. Thank you, JR. You're a legend. If we were doing a roster composition, you'd be number one on our list. But so let me ask you real quick, Stephen, does it factor in transfers at all? Because that's going to be, I think, the number one question.
It does not. And that is kind of, I think, probably one of the reasons, I guess, over the last couple of years, I probably put like less importance on this data, the five-year trend, because it does not take into account transfers. It would probably be interesting to kind of average where teams have finished in recruiting rankings and maybe the overall transfer rankings like on 247 or on 3, just to see kind of how it balances out. But, you know, I think I look at it as like, it's one piece of really interesting data. It's just the freshman classes. It's just the signees. It doesn't take into account the subtractions over the transfer years, but it just kind of gives you some interesting things and just kind of shows you whether teams, the baseline of talent's going up, it's going down. And also I think it's a good reminder of where some of these SEC teams stand nationally in terms of roster talent. And it's pretty crazy to think of how deep the SEC is compared to some of the other leagues that may not have a team finish in the top 25 over the last 5 years in recruiting.
Yeah, so here it is. I did a little graphic to make it easier for people to digest here. I'm going to throw it up on the screen now. But so again, essentially what this is the recruiting class average over the last 5 recruiting cycles. And again, this does not include transfers coming in or transfers coming out. This is just acquisitions of high school. And Alabama leads the way, no surprise. the decaying dynasty. It's still it's dead and buried now, in my opinion. But they had the one hell of a run, Steven. If you look at the last five signing classes, they've averaged, their average class ranking is 1.8. So just 0.8 away from literally a perfect a roster composition through high school recruiting. Georgia second with an average of 2.4. So, you know, what were you, as if anybody needed a reminder, Stephen, Alabama and Georgia have more or less dominated the conference for the past 5 years. But of course, we can't say that now because in comes Texas and they go right to the SEC championship. Their average is 6, LSU 7.4, Oklahoma. That was surprising to me, Stephen, at 9.8. So the fifth highest in the SEC. Texas A&M 10.4, Florida 12.8. Tennessee's next at 14.8, Auburn 15. I was surprised by that. I thought Auburn would be ahead of Tennessee, but again, they've had coaching transitions, so that kind of explains some of that. Ole Miss average class the last 5 years 20.8, Missouri 23.2, and then the rest of these are outside the top 25. Kentucky 26.8, Mississippi State 27.4. Which is actually tied with Arkansas, 27.4. This blew me away, Stephen. South Carolina 32. I thought it would be a little bit higher than that. And then Vanderbilt, no surprise really, 49.8 average class ranking. So when you put this together, Stephen, what immediately jumped out to you?
I think there were a couple things, Mike, and I think just thinking back, I started doing this exercise probably like 8 or 9 years ago. And when I did that, I went back and looked at some of the data and I realized Florida was a lot closer to the top 3 or 4 in the SEC. And now kind of, in the middle there, I think going to be 7th this season. So a little bit of talent erosion in terms of the recruiting rankings. You mentioned Texas. You know, if you look at the trend line for Texas, they had that number 15 class in 2021. But since then, they've all ranked in the top 6, including this year's class, which is first. So I like the trend line there. When you start studying like where teams are going up or down, Texas going on the rise in terms of bringing talent, another argument in favor of, hey, they lose a lot, but they're probably going to reload this season. I think looking beyond that, you see Ole Miss at 10th in this average, not surprising, but you also see like the 16th best class this season. That's actually their highest individual class over the last 5 years, but also another reason why they're so portal heavy. A good reminder that trying to close that gap between the Alabamas, Georgias, and Texas is going to be really difficult over the regular recruiting, but you can do that through the transfer portal. And then you get some of those outliers, like South Carolina had a lower rated class in 2021. That's kind of why they're at 15. But just think about this in the context of the SEC and nationally. Last season, when I did this exercise for all the conferences, the power conferences, the SEC had 15 teams in the top 27. That just kind of gives you how, you know, in depth or deep that this conference is in terms of talent. Vanderbilt was the only one to not rank in that mix. They were 42nd, so not too far behind, but just kind of gives you an idea of how stacked this conference is.
Right, and again, with South Carolina 32, you mentioned the coaching transition. That's got to be factored in. Again, we can't say it enough. This does not count transfers. So two things it tells me about South Carolina. They've done an outstanding job with transfers. And I think this should give you an indication. It's wild, Steven. I mean, not many people. I mean, most people are not complete fools. But some of them say, oh, Lenore Sellers, completely overhyped. What has he done? I mean, my God, they just won 9 games. And again, look at now, this is not the end-all be-all of roster evaluation, but this gives you an idea that if you're winning 9 games in this conference with your average class ranking 32, you simply cannot do that without an elite quarterback. So that, I think, is further evidence that Lenore Sellers, as a freshman, I know redshirt, but still freshman, outstanding last season. I think Mississippi State, with all the transition they've had over the years, it's very impressive to me that that they are not Well, certainly above Vanderbilt, but above, well, tied with Arkansas and above South Carolina, I think, is very impressive. I think this also goes to show what a hell of a job Eli Drinkwitz is doing with a 23rd rated recruiting class on average. But again, they're another one that has been very effective in the portal. And then it kind of goes without saying, big reason why I'm not hyping them up. I've refused to hype them up ever again, Stephen, but A&M, top 10 class, far from top 10 finishers more often than, I mean, hell, just the 1 year, I guess, you could under Jimbo, and that was the COVID year. But, that's an outlier to me, that A&M is obviously not living up to their potential. But again, that's kind of obvious. And then LSU, I think you could say the same, because I think they should be doing a lot better with the number 7 overall talent.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to look at these teams in sort of a tier, and Alabama, Georgia, Texas, all probably going to be picked, I think, pretty, I would say probably widespread, like playoff contenders or at least playoff teams by most people. Then you get to LSU, Oklahoma, A&M, and Florida, and those kind of all feel very much like wild cards to me. Probably LSU, maybe a little bit closer to that first tier, but definitely like Oklahoma, make or break season. Roster talent's not an issue, but they've got to get that offense fixed. Texas A&M, kind of the annual question, like, can they meet expectations relative to roster talent, relative to where they are kind of as a program on and hierarchy? And then Florida too. I mean, I mentioned it, like, their talent level has slipped a little bit over the last like 8 to 10 years, but still to be 7th in the SEC and at 12.8 over the last 5 years, that is still very much in the realm of playoff contender, ability to win playoff games if you have everything fall into place. I think on South Carolina being 32 in the average, that's also, I think, when you start thinking about like how you build a championship team, and I think a team like South Carolina always falls, at least to me, into the category of you need to be really good at sort of recruiting, developing, and then you can find those elite pieces to help raise your ceiling. And that's kind of like what Lenora Sellers has the ability to do, that, yeah, you might be 13th, 14th, 15th in the SEC just on average, but if you have that difference maker at quarterback, that can cover up for a lot of things. So I think that's kind of a interesting way to look at where South Carolina is here, and also the job that Shane Beamer has done in sort of developing and recruiting. I think that's a kind of a testament, and the program's in a pretty good place going into 2025.
Yeah, no doubt. And who's also in a good place in 2025, Stephen, is Cousin Gunner. Come on, Gunner Ward. Appreciate you, brother. Gunner, welcome to the family. He just became a member to the channel. Thank you, brother. We appreciate you. He says LSU SEC champs next year, Stephen. That is going to be a natural segue to, I don't know if you've seen this yet, Stephen. I'm going to throw this at you. We've had a couple updated over-under win totals. I get them all out, but they only have a couple over at FanDuel right now. So let's go LSU first, because Gunner's an LSU fan. Over-under, Stephen, for them LSU Tigers right now, according to FanDuel, is 8.5 wins. Let's go down their schedule real quick. They open at Clemson. Remember, they haven't won an opener, I don't think, in 5 years, unfortunately. We got a break at Louisiana Tech at home, Florida at home, Southeast Louisiana at home, at Ole Miss, very tricky game. Then you get your bye week. Then you get South Carolina at home. You're at Vanderbilt. You get Texas A&M at home. Then you get another bye. Then you're at Bama. Arkansas and Western Kentucky each at home. And then you finish up the regular season at Oklahoma. So just based on what we know today, Stephen, based on this schedule, would you go over, would you go under for them LSU Tigers, over under 8.5?
I would go over. I like this team. And, you know, I mentioned when we talked about the early top 25, I've got them right there in the top 10. I could be persuaded to have them a few spots higher. But I think when you look at their schedule, Clemson, Ole Miss, and Alabama, key road games, certainly. If you think, well, but maybe they probably lose like two of those, I still think they can get to 10-2. There are some tricky other road games, like, you know, Oklahoma. Also, not going to count out Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt from knocking off somebody else again this season. But I like this LSU team. I'm going to take the over.
Yeah. Well, Cousin Gunnar, he's at 10-2 with, I think that's a realistic, and with the schedule with Clemson on it, I think 10-2, I think that would get LSU in the college football playoff. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I would. I think you want to be 10-2 to make the college football playoff. I think that's the cut line you want to aim for every season. There are some scenarios where you could see 9-3, especially if a team has a really hard schedule, and of course the dominoes elsewhere kind of fall that way. But I think 10-2, if LSU kind of follows the trend and loses the season opener but rebounds in SEC play, I think that definitely puts them in the college football playoff.
Now, how about this one? This has since been updated, Stephen. It opened at another sports book at 10.5. It's down to 9.5 for the Georgia Bulldogs, which is pretty interesting. So here's their schedule. It was a road gauntlet last year. Now it's it's still very difficult, but you get a lot of home games here. Marshall and Austin Peay. Stephen's a proud Austin Peay graduate, so he's a little biased on that one. And then they're at Tennessee. They get a bye before Alabama, which of course comes to Athens this year. Kentucky at home, at Auburn, Ole Miss at home. You get your other bye. You get Florida and Jacksonville, at Mississippi State, Texas at home, Charlotte at home, and then Georgia Tech. For some reason, they're moving that to Mercedes-Benz. I guess Georgia Tech can't afford to play in their home stadium anymore. But over under 9.5, I mean, that seems way too low for me.
Oh, man, that is way too low. Are we really going to think that Kirby Smart's team finishes like 8-4 or 9-3 next year? I know that schedule was tough going to Tennessee and going to Auburn. You get Texas and Alabama at home. But, I mean, Alabama, probably I'd put it in Texas, too, like in the toss-up category. I also just think from a personnel team perspective, I'm not going to doubt Kirby Smart. I think they will find the right answers. And this team probably will get better as the season progresses. So give me the over on Georgia. That might be one of my favorite plays of the season.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out, what do they know? They're setting it at 9.5. Maybe they're just not impressed with Gunnar Stockton. Now the other one, the Texas, it was 10.5, Stephen. This another one down to 9.5. What in the world's going on here? Ohio State on the road to opener, San Jose State and UTEP back-to-back home games. After that, you get your bye, you got Sam Houston, then you're at Florida, Oklahoma in the neutral site, at Kentucky, at Mississippi State, Vanderbilt at home. Then you get a bye, which is crucial because your next opponent is Georgia on the road. Arkansas and A&M both at home to close out the regular season. This is another one. It's a little baffling to me that it's 9.5.
Yeah, I'm confused on that one, too. I was just kind of counting up the games. I mean, I could see them being underdogs against Ohio State and Georgia. In the swamp against Florida, certainly if you think like I do, Florida is going to be better this year, that will be tricky. And then A&M at the end of the season in a rivalry game. But their schedule was pretty favorable this year. It's pretty favorable again next year. I would kind of take a stab at like 10-2 off the cuff kind of early for Texas. So I would play the over there.
I'll do reset the mic. I don't know what in the world's going on.
Is Cousin Shane sabotaging us from Orlando?
Cousin Jimmy says, put another quarter in it. Right.
We have an NIL deal to be had here.
We need that. What we really need is that Cracker Barrel money to fix this damn show. You know what? Okay. All right. We're back. Sorry about that. So on with the show. So another one that is baffling to me, Stephen. Tennessee, 9.5 as well. Again, I'm a Tennessee grad. I'm trying to figure out Georgia, Texas, and Tennessee all 9.5 over-under over at FanDuel. Tennessee schedules Syracuse in Atlanta in the opener. East Tennessee, Georgia, and UAB, three straight home games. Then they're at Mississippi State. You get your bye. Then you get Arkansas at home. Then you're at Bama, at Kentucky, Oklahoma at home. Then you get another bye for New Mexico State at home, at Florida, and Vanderbilt at home. The only thing I can think of, and I'm trying not to be like too disrespectful for Tennessee, but this seems like a play on ease of schedule more than anything.
Yeah, that's where I was kind of landing with this one. I think that schedule's pretty favorable. for Tennessee. I think the question that I'm kind of wrestling with Tennessee is there's a good chunk of talent that's gone from last year's team. And it's not only the talent that's gone, it's the, you know, how this team is going to be built. Nico's going to have to shoulder more with Dylan Sampson off to the NFL. There are some losses on defense as well. And I mean, Jermard McCoy, like how healthy is he going to be early on with that torn ACL? But that schedule's pretty favorable. I think just looking at it, I mean, I would probably give Tennessee losses to Georgia, Alabama, and Florida right off the bat. So I'm probably going to look to play the under here. It seems like I would probably slot Tennessee more in at 8-4 or 9-3 right now.
Right. And certainly, again, even as a Tennessee graduate, if I'm looking at Georgia, Texas, and Tennessee, I think there's a clear separation. That doesn't mean that Tennessee can't play with those teams, but I think there's a separation right now. Now, things could change. If Nico's amazing, you know, maybe it's a different story. But what do they say, Stephen? If ifs and buts and candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas, you know? How about this one? Alabama, 8.5. Man, what happened to the mighty dynasty, Stephen? 8.5 seems – I can't believe we haven't fired DeBoer yet. But here we go. We got Florida State on the road in the opener, ULM and Wisconsin – home games, back-to-back home games. Then you get your bye week. You're at Georgia. Vandy at home. Mizzou on the road. Tennessee at home. At South Carolina. You get your bye week for three straight home games against LSU, Oklahoma, and the Panthers. I'm trying to figure who the Panther is. And then at Auburn. Where would you go with 8.5 for Alabama?
Mike, I think that Panther is Eastern Illinois, too. Was it the Tony Romo's alma mater, right? 8.5, man, that's tough. I would probably look to play the over here, and I'm kind of like on the overs on a couple of these. The opener against Florida State will tell us a lot about both teams. I'm very interested early on in Alabama's quarterback situation, and of course, you know, we know Florida State was really bad last season, so just seeing how they look is high on my radar. You know, I think underdogs against Georgia, you know, Auburn, South Carolina, that's going to be, I mean, the schedule's pretty tough, and even getting LSU and Tennessee at home. So I probably lean 9-3 right now, but I don't feel really good about that one.
Hey, shout out Michael Riley. He says Sean Payton and Jimmy G also went there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, can't lose a DeBoer, but they've got a hell of a track record over there. And then last one, again, I don't know why they only have these teams right now over at FanDuel, but Florida, 6.5. This for Michael Riley, I guess. Long Island in the opener at home, South Florida at home, at LSU, at Miami. You get your bye week. You get Texas at home, at Texas A&M, Mississippi State at home. Then you get another bye for Georgia down in Jacksonville, of course. At Kentucky, at Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Florida State, back-to-back home games to end the regular season. 6.5 seems a little low for the Gators. What do you think?
It definitely seems low to me. I just counted those. 7 of those teams on their schedule are in my early top 25 for next year. So this is a very, very challenging schedule again for Florida. I would still go with the over, though, because, I mean, I think Ole Miss, we'll see. I mean, it's still a team in transition. You do get Tennessee at home. We saw Florida play Georgia tougher last season too. So I'm not picking Florida to be Georgia right now, but I don't think it's crazy to think that if you have Florida in your top 15, yes, the schedule is difficult, but you have to assume Lagway is better and you assume they continue the defensive improvement that probably puts them in the conversation to hit the over there. I think 6 is too low. Even this, with the difficult schedule, I'd probably still play 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm. Shout out Cousin Gunner. He's back with another one. Steven, SEC rankings, LSU or Florida, 1, Texas, Georgia, 3, 5, 6, 7 between Bama, South Carolina. Wait a second. He's got LSU and Florida, 1 or 2. He really is an LSU homer. Okay, maybe, but also these over-unders are jokes. We all remember Florida State last year, right? Well, it's a good thing, but we don't cover Florida State because we only cover good football, not garbage ass ACC football. But we appreciate you. What's the most egregious of what Gunner has to say here? Is it LSU 1 or is it That'd probably be the most egregious, I think.
Do you think it's crazy to think that LSU could win the SEC title next year?
Well, I would say this. Yeah, all right. You might be onto something, Stephen. I think it's more egregious to have. Of course, they just did beat LSU. I think it's more egregious to have Florida 2 than it is to have LSU 1. If you were asking me, not that I'm picking either one of these today, but who's more likely to win the SEC next year, LSU or Florida, I would go LSU. I really would.
I would definitely take LSU over Florida. I think Florida at 1 seems like a pretty big stretch to me. I still like Georgia and Texas, probably Alabama too. And I probably would bump South Carolina up a little bit as well. Florida, like we just talked about their schedule, like I think if their schedule was a little bit easier, you know, schedule doesn't necessarily translate to, like good teams can overcome a hard schedule.
Right.
But I don't know that I would necessarily look like if this was Georgia's schedule, I'd feel a little bit more confident about, you know, potential path for the playoffs. So Florida's kind of still a little bit of a mystery. I love the way they closed last year. I love some of the pieces in place, but to go first kind of tier in the SEC, that's probably too big of a jump for me.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stephen, we're about to get into the mailbag, but real quick, this went viral. I blame you, Stephen, as always. They were calling me clickbait. I was like, it's not even my list. Stephen's quarterback rankings, if everybody missed it on Monday, and I don't know how you did. He's got Arch Manning number one projected next season in the SEC. He must be part of that Manning family over here. But I just wanted to share this real quick, Stephen. There was one of the questions was from Cousin Bart, who said, who is the most overrated quarterback in the conference, and why is it Arch? And I thought someone asked if how much cornbread you had when you were making this list. I thought that was pretty good.
Good.
Yeah. And then the other one that was fantastic, shout out cousin Christopher Wilhelm. He said, ain't no way Zach Calzada is still in college football, but it's true. He's there. So I just thought this would be a good opportunity to troll Steven one more time.
Absolutely. Maybe I should have emphasized a little bit more that these are like pre-spring, subject to change into 2025. I did actually, I was kind of going crazy after we talked the other day. I was like, man, am I just a total idiot? Which, yes, I am. But I was looking around at some other like early quarterback rankings, and I was like, oh, these ain't that far off. So I did feel slightly better for myself, I guess. And I guess I need to have my lawyer look at our contract to make sure that when we do these, I make Mike participate as well. Just kidding.
Well, I do love ripping a list, because it's always Shane that's ripping mine. So right. Little role reversal. It's pretty, now I know, I understand why he likes doing it so much. You know what?
Oh yeah. It's fun to take that list apart. Is Arch at 1 like the biggest like criticism you've seen so far?
Oh, far and away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, just blatant Texas homerism is the accusation, me throwing it out there on the Twitter sphere. And I don't, clearly anyone that follows my account knows I'm not a Texas homer, yet they see a list, and it's not even my list, yet they blame me. The other one that is kind of the most popular, Ole Miss fans are like over the moon. They think Austin Simmons is going to win 3 Heismans or something crazy. Like they were dumbfounded. Georgia fans were pretty upset. And Missouri fans were a little upset when I can't imagine Missouri fans have ever watched Bo play football yet. They're just going to be mad because they're at 15.
I think Prabula at 15 is actually, I would say I can defend all of these, but like that's one of the ones I feel probably the most like safe in at this point, just because he's largely unproven.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Simmons or Gunnar Stockton. I mean, you and I talked about this. I think any of those quarterbacks 5 through 11 are basically in the same tier. Like
right.
you could move those around a little bit, and I wouldn't disagree with you. So I don't disagree with anybody who has Austin Simmons higher, Gunnar Stockton. Certainly. I like both of those, and both of those will be in my top 20 ish type quarterbacks this season. They're just really clustered together. So it kind of like, are you going to weigh potential? Are you going to weigh production? This is a very difficult exercise to do when we don't have any like spring intel right now.
That's why I wait for June or July to Dubai.
I've already softened the defense up. Now Mike can come through.
Exactly. All right, we're about to get into the mailbag, but real quick, Stephen, got to remind the folks we're brought to you by Public Rec. Check them out, publicrec.com. Promo code SEC for 20% off your entire order over at Public Rec. Cannot recommend Public Rec enough. They make really outstanding clothes. I was just wearing the shirt. The only reason I'm not wearing it now, I'm under all these damn lights, but a long sleeve shirt was outstanding, and I really, really, really love the pants they sent me. Public Rec is different than, you know, you order something and it's a small, medium, large, or extra large, what have you. It's made to fit. You give them your length size, you give them your waist size, and it, I'm telling you, this is high quality stuff that I loved it so much because they sent me some free product that I used the promo code SEC over at publicrec.com to get 20% off. I ordered two more pairs of pants, so I got three pairs of pants courtesy of Public Rec. I promise you, if you get this, you're going to love it. So check them out, publicrec.com. They got many, many different colors, and there's going to be the most comfortable pair of pants you got. So again, publicrec.com, promo code SEC for 20% off your full order.
Mike, isn't the worst thing, and this is the great thing about our friends at Public Rec, like the worst thing is you buy two shirts in the same size and they're like different, like, you know, our pairs of pants. Like, you know, I've had that trouble so many times. So, man, Public Rec, what a great sponsor of the show. I look forward to supporting them.
Yep. All right, let's get into the mailbag. Steven, this one, first one comes from Cousin Shane, who I have a photo of here. This is Thanos Shane here. He says, is the show better without the fat, bald guy? And shout out Cousin Shane for poking fun at himself. But this is no reflection on Steven. But no, I mean, replace me and you got Cousin Shane and Steven. It's probably a better show. But Shane is just simply unreplaceable. You know what?
Yeah, the show is definitely not better with Steven replacing Cousin Shane. So Cousin Shane is too valuable, which is why, you know, I try to sub in for him as many times as I can because, you know, he's like the Derrick Henry of the show. Like, you got to give him some rest every now and then. Those 30 carry games during the season take a toll. So, man, the Shane is just a legend. It's like I said, we were doing the Cuzzies. It was like a you know, bucket list that I could check that off with all three of you guys, you know, all three of us hanging out.
Absolutely. All right. Shout out to Cousin Michael Riley. He's an official member of the channel. Anytime we do a mailbag and you ask a question, you're guaranteed to get your question answered. How about this one, Stephen, from Michael Riley? What is or was your favorite SEC football era and what made it stand out? And I'll give you some time to think about that as I made a little graphic. Well, not really a graphic. I just screenshotted Winsipedia or Wikipedia. But this for me, this is the era because I was in college during this time as well. But I'm going to say the you know, early 2000s to about 2013-ish. Well, I just loved it because we had LSU, Auburn, Georgia, Florida, LSU again, Florida, Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Alabama, Auburn. Got all of these teams winning the conference championship. It just, there was many, I don't want to call them dynasties, but we, you know, this is the Urban Meyer years. This is the beginning of Nick Saban. This is Cam Newton. I mean, it just, this to me is like the era that made me fall in love with college football. And I just, there's nothing against, you know, where it's at now, but compare this to the last 10 years and it's Alabama or Georgia. And one time LSU won the SEC. This we got to get away from. And I realized Georgia just did it again. So it's a bad example, but I think moving forward, I don't think it's going to be dominated by one team like this. I think this is an outlier. I think this is mostly Nick Saban, and I think the NIL, the portal, the 12-team playoff is going to lead to more parity. I think that is apparent just in the small sample size. So what's your thoughts on that, Stephen, and what's your favorite era?
I hate to be boring, but I would pick the same thing because for some of the same reasons that you mentioned, you know, just being in college, just being out of college, And I think maybe that was also probably with the start of the SEC's run at the national championship, like kind of stretch there, like sort of like the SEC chance and all, like the dominance of the conference started. You know, I think it just feels like too, like some of the star players that played in there, like Tebow, Cam Newton, you also had the start of the Nick Saban run at Alabama. That feels just kind of like, I don't want to sound like, you know, super old, but like the golden era sort of like the SEC and before like all the transfer portal craziness and things like that. So I would probably go with that era as well.
Yeah, we're going to be telling our grandkids about the time when players had to sit out a year and were blocked from transferring. You know what I mean?
Do you remember the Jefferson Pilot sports case that my parents, when we were, me and my brother were young, we had this like little TV. It was like a black and white TV. It was really old. And so I had to watch like Jefferson Pilot games on that black and white TV. I promise I'm not that old, but I just thought it was funny. It's the only place that we could get those games on there is, I guess, pretty appropriate for it.
Hey, how about this one from Luke the Wonder Dog? I love this question. Rank each SEC team by 12-team playoff expectations to appease the fan base. So he threw out odds for each, but I did it a little bit differently, Stephen. I went from a scale of 0 to 100%, basically the expectation that the fan base will be happy, you know, or maybe more accurately, the percentage of the fans that expect to make the playoff next season. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I got it.
So I'll just go in alphabetical, and I'll throw out the numbers I came up with, and you tell me if you agree, or maybe you'd set a different number. And for Alabama, pretty high, but I went 90%. So meaning I would say roughly 90% of Alabama fans expect the Crimson Tide in year two under Kalen DeBoer to make the 12-team college football playoff. And you know, quite frankly, they should after dominating the four-team era.
Absolutely. I think even though Alabama won 9 games last year, which isn't that bad, it was still pretty disappointing if you're an Alabama fan to miss the playoff, given the track record and also the roster talent. We talked about the recruiting rankings earlier. You know, 1.8 average over the last 5 years. That will be number one in college football. And yes, while they've had some attrition, I mean, their defense should be one of the best in the country to go with a track record of a coaching staff that can produce offense. So yes, I think it should be maybe even a little bit higher. I would go like 95 maybe.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I like that. All right, how about for Arkansas? I said, again, this is not to win the national championship or anything, but the question from Luke the Wonder Dog was to make the college football playoff. And I went 5% of Arkansas fans expecting to make the college football playoff. Too high, too low? What's your thoughts on that number?
I think that's about right. You're like a super diehard Arkansas fan, probably, if you think that they make the playoff next year, the most optimistic case. Just given where Arkansas kind of has been, you'd be looking at like an Indiana-like jump in order to make the playoff. That's pretty rare. So yeah, I think the 5% is about right.
And I don't like to go down this avenue because I hate, you know, doom and gloom and fans thinking, you know, we should go to the Big 12 or something like that. But I do think it is fair to say that if Arkansas was not in the SEC, of course you could say this for literally anybody, but I think Arkansas's path to a college football, like they are capable of making the college football playoff, even in the SEC, if all the pieces fit, but it's just so hard because, again, going back to the talent, I mean, you can have a top 28 recruiting cycle and you're dang near last in the SEC. It's just so hard for a program like that unless you raise your talent profile.
I might be slightly off on this, but I just eyeballing the numbers from this year, I think Arkansas, the 5-year average is going to kind of further your point, would be like right at the top of the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
So like it just shows how difficult it is in this conference to kind of compete with the Alabama, Georgias, and Texas, whereas the path would certainly be a little bit more favorable. But, you know, saying all that, I mean, we saw what Indiana did this year. We've seen SMU. the 12-team playoff allows for teams like Arkansas, Missouri, even Kentucky, like some of these years, to have that one special season where things fall into place and you can make that playoff run.
All right, how about for Auburn? I said, this may be too low, because there's high expectations with Auburn fans, but I said 25% 25% of the fans probably expect to make the college football playoff year three under Hugh Freeze. What's your thoughts on that number?
I might go a little bit higher, almost just because, like, to use the Indiana and SMU's examples, fan bases have seen that and said, hey, we're recruiting top 10 classes, and do we think we have a quarterback now that can execute the system maybe at a higher level than Peyton Thorne? So I might go closer to like 35% maybe.
That's Stephen buying into the Hugh Freeze hype. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I'm probably too low with 25% because that's the expectation. Maybe not every year, but the expectation is to compete. They've won national championships at Auburn. Got to do a lot better than 5-7, obviously. All right, for Florida, I said, and I'm only saying this because of the schedule, really, but I said 45% because I think, you know, they got a taste of success. Winning their last four, may have one of the best, well, not may, they do have one of the best quarterbacks, I think, in the country. I'd say about 45% think Florida should be in the playoff.
I think that's about right. I think given the schedule, and I think maybe there's still some like lukewarm belief from the fan base from Billy Napier. And of course, they also hired another co-defensive coordinator today. And Billy Napier also said he's not going to hand over the play calling duties, which I know that's sort of a point of frustration among many Florida fans. So I think given the schedule, given where they've been, maybe a little bit of doubt about Napier, I think 45% seems about right.
And again, if they get it rolling and they get where they should be, where that program should be, that number would skyrocket, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. It's early in the season, that schedule, if they can take on and beat Miami, and then was it LSU before Miami, if they win those two games, to be 4-0 going into October 4th against Texas, I mean, I think those odds are skyrocketed a lot closer to maybe 80 or 90%.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about Georgia? This is one of the easier ones, I think, on the board here. I said 100%. 100% of Georgia fans, I think you don't even make the playoff. It would be, you know, a disaster. It maybe is too strong a word because I would imagine something bad happened. But, you know, I think every Georgia fan expects to make the playoff.
Agree. I would go with 100%. The only thing that kind of jumped into my mind was with a first-time starter, a quarterback, is there a little bit more doubt among Georgia fans? But still, this is – it's one of the nation's best roster. It's arguably the best kind of program in college football, what everybody's aiming for. So it's got to be 100%.
And speaking of 100%, Kentucky – just kidding. I put them at 100% not to make – I put it 0%. I saw Ollie in the comments. Shout out Ollie. I think even the most diehard Kentucky fan. I'm not trying to poke fun, but I don't think there's any Kentucky fans that are expecting to make the playoff next season.
Agree. I think just given what happened last season and given the questions and sort of uncertainty about the quarterback situation and also maybe some doubt about Mark Stoops after last season, I think zero is about right.
Hate it for him. All right. How about LSU? I may have missed the mark on this one, Stephen. We just talked about them making the playoff, perhaps. I put it at 65%. Again, as I'm saying that out loud, I feel like that's probably too low. Where would you put that number?
I would go maybe 85.
Oh,
maybe I'm too high. But I also think given just Garrett Nussmeier coming back is a huge deal. Like if you have that type of difference maker at quarterback, also I would expect Blake Baker's defense to be better in year two. Mm-hmm. I know the schedule is, you know, it's got some landmines, certainly. But I think at this point of Brian Kelly's tenure with the talent transfer quarterback, I think its expectation has to be to make the college football playoff.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I missed the mark on that one pretty badly, but I'm trying to give Brian Kelly some love here. But is going to be trouble, I think, if he misses the playoff. How about Ole Miss? This is going to be a fascinating one, Stephen. I'm very curious to hear what you say. I said 49%. So I'm kind of cheating here and just saying, I think roughly half, but maybe not every single member of, you know, maybe not split 1-2 or 1-1. Because I think Ole Miss is certainly capable with the schedule, with the coaching, with the talent, all the pieces are there. But I can't rightly say that and then look back at last year. I think the overall roster, I don't think there's any way it's as good. Doesn't mean you can't be better on the field. But it's tough for me to essentially expect the playoff when we missed it last year.
I think we're on the same page here, because before you said 49%, I was going to go with 50. Just because it does feel like it's probably 50-50. Like, you had that taste of success last season, almost getting there. And with the NIL transfer investment, there probably is a good chunk of the fans that think we should be back in there next season. And I think there's going to be another slice that says, look, we're replacing a lot. Walter Nolan, Princely, like, those guys are going to be difficult to replace. Like, they're the top of the transfer classes this year, I don't think are necessarily as talented as some of the ones we saw last year, you know, with Walter Nolan especially. I think just that 50-50, like that, like I said, that taste of success, but also you got first-time starter, a quarterback, you're losing a lot. I could see this, a good chunk of the fan base thinking, yeah, we're reloading, maybe don't expect to make the playoff, but still expect to win 8 or 9 games again. So I would go 50% there.
We had some LSU cousins chime in. Cousin Jared said for Brian Kelly to keep his job, better be 100% playoff. And then Cousin Gunner, similar thing. 100% of us expect. 99% of us know we won't if we lose the first game. Yeah, that's college football fandom right there, isn't it?
What's the percentage among LSU fans that think they're going to win the season opener based on what's happened the last couple of years?
Yeah, maybe we'll reserve judgment till we find out if they can win an opener. You know what?
You know, it's funny. Like, I think all these openers, like, they were favored against USC, and I think they were favored at least once against Florida State, and they lost, of course, all those, and they'll probably be an underdog at Clemson. This will be the one that LSU wins, right? That's just the way it goes.
And they were certainly favored against UCLA too. That goes back to the Coach O era.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a chance to sort of break the curse or break the streak this year against Clemson.
Jared says 6 times a charm. All right, again, not to poke fun here, but Mississippi State, again, they're the only other zero that I have here. I think I can't rightly think there's a State fan out there that expects this team to make the playoff.
I would go with 0% unless you can go back to that 2014 team that had Dak Prescott and they were ranked number one. Like, if you could rekindle the magic and rekindle that roster. But yeah, 0, honestly, there's just a very limited path there for Mississippi State.
Just want to see progress. That's the yes. Key for Mississippi State next year. How about Missouri? This is another one. I'm fascinated to hear what you have to say, Stephen. I think this actually may be a little bit too low. But I said 25%.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I think there will be a very optimistic group of Missouri fans because of the sort of the last 2 years, a very successful 2-season run for Eli Drinkwitz and the transfer portal haul, one of the best in the country, to go with a pretty favorable schedule. And just like you and I talked about a few weeks ago, look at what Indiana did. Look at what SMU did. Favorable schedule, right personnel hits. Maybe some of that is like internal culture development team moving forward at SMU. You could see those things work out for Missouri. So I was going to go with 25% just kind of given some of the factors that Missouri has working for it next year.
All right. And then how about this is another one, interesting one, Oklahoma, Stephen, where the expectation, I think, is to make it there every year, but do Oklahoma fans rightly think that? I mean, I think they'll talk themselves into it, but I said 20% probably expect that shouldn't be the expectation, certainly not every year, but I think this year, I think it's tough to see this being a playoff team. If they take a big step forward, I think 26 is that playoff year for them.
I would go lower, I think. I would go like maybe like 15%.
Mm-hmm.
I think just there will, I'm sure there's probably a slice of this fan base that is out like on Brent Venables thinking that he's the guy for sure. But I also think there will be some optimism because he has done good things with the defense, and the Mateer Arbuckle combination could really turn this offense around quickly. And they are probably bound to have much better luck next season in the injury department than they did this season. So I would probably go like 15%, but I don't think that's, I don't think 20% is too crazy.
Mm. And then how about, I may have missed the mark here. South Carolina. I put it pretty high though, because we got Sellers, because we got Dylan Edwards and all the hype from last season, 9-4 season. Tell me if I'm wrong, Steven. I said 50% South Carolina fans. And again, in the 4-team era, that would have been crazy. But the 12-team playoff, these are the programs that can get in now.
I would go maybe a little bit higher. I'd maybe go like 60%, especially considering they were right on the doorstep of making it last season. Mm-hmm. And you bring back arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the country in Lenore Sellers. And also, I think you could sell like program progression here. The 2023 to 2024, they made this big jump. Now you have this superstar quarterback. Feels like the program is trending up. That and they're going to be picked probably top 10 to 15 by most people in the preseason. So I would maybe go like 60% for South Carolina.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I'm right there with you. How about Tennessee? What percentage of fans you think expect to make the playoff? And man, I think I was too low on all these, but I said 50. Again, 50% of Tennessee fans.
I would probably go maybe 70. Maybe maybe that's too high. Just thinking Nico coming back, maybe he reaches expectations. Tennessee also made it last year, favorable schedule. Tennessee is going to be picked pretty high, I'm sure, in the preseason. So maybe that's too optimistic given their personnel losses, but maybe it's like, I would go maybe 70.
Mm, okay. And then the only other 100 that I got on the board is Texas. I think as long as Sarkisian's there, I would... And certainly Arch Manning, I would assume every Texas fan, bare minimum, expects to make the playoff.
100% agree with 100%. Texas has to expect to make the playoff next year and go far because they've made the semifinals in back-to-back years. So I think the expectation is not only to make it, it's probably to get to the national championship game.
Mm. All right, how about A&M, Steven? I have a feeling you're going high. I keep going low. I said 20% expect to make the playoff. What's your thoughts on that number?
Man, I'm really wrestling with this one. I might go higher, maybe like 30%. I would make the case if I was probably the most optimistic Texas A&M fan, I could say this team was in the hunt to make the college football playoff and SEC championship game to basically the final week of the season, the final stretch. Mm-hmm. And if you believe in Mike Elko, and I do, certainly. I think that this program will continue to progress. Also, I think Marcel Reed is going to take a big step forward. Probably the downside would be Texas A&M has had high expectations and missed before. So I'm sure that it's almost until you do it and until you see it happen, I'm sure there's going to be a percentage that just takes it off the board. So I might go a little bit higher, like maybe 30%.
Cousin Zach says 100% chance of 8-4. You son of a... All right, and then last, Vanderbilt here. What percentage of Vanderbilt fans? And again, I think it's more than zero. Every year doing this would have been a zero for me, but magic can happen. Give me Vanderbilt. 5% of fans think they can make a playoff run.
I'm going to go 10%, just giving Diego Pavia an extra 5%. The Pavia bump there.
I hear you. Yeah, I think that's completely fair. We get some Pavia magic. They're back in it.
Yeah, that's probably like the ultimate, like one person could carry Vanderbilt to the college football playoff. It's going to happen. Like it would be under Diego Pavia. I know it's a long shot given where they are next season. So you have to be probably the most optimistic Vanderbilt fan in the world to think about the college football playoff. But Pavia magic, Pavia belief can go a long way.
Right. And you know what else I believe in, Steven? And that's joy mode. Speaking of our next question, I'm tying this in perfectly. Try joymode.com. Promo code SEC at the checkout. It's 20% off a single order, 30% off if you start a subscription service. What is this Joy Mode? It's Cousin Shane approved down there. He's having a Joy Mode time down in Orlando with the missus. Because what he's got Joy Mode. He took two cases with him, I believe, because this is a long trip. He's staying down there all week. What this is, you mix it with a package of water, 45 minutes, you're ready for some Joy Mode, if you know what I mean. Get a boost anytime, anywhere, never miss a beat. 100% all-natural supplement designed to enhance blood flow. Join the over 200,000 men who trust Joy Mode to boost their performance without side effects. Try joymode.com, promo code SEC, 20% off your order, 30% off a subscription service. And you better believe it, Stephen. Shane's down there telling me about the joy he's having thanks to Joy Mode. You know what?
Is he texting you play by play?
I think he is. I think he is. And I bring that up because our next question, Joy Mode related, Stephen. Shout out Colin Moore Magic. He had a couple questions for us, but I thought this was the best one. Could you see Ole Miss winning a national championship if Lane Kiffin, Joy Mode, he's a big Joy Moder, stays for 5 or more years? He says, I'm a diehard rebel. Could Ole Miss, you think, win a national championship if you knew Kiffin was staying at least 5 more years?
It's a good question. I hate to say this, but it almost feels like last year was a pretty, I don't know if they would have won it. I still think they would have won a couple games.
Yeah.
I tend to think it's going to be tough, not impossible, but I would probably say that even with Kiffin staying, I probably would take the no side of Ole Miss winning the national championship.
You son of a...
You think that's,
I went yes, Stephen. Okay. I think Ole Miss, clearly we have seen they are ahead of the curve in this NIL and portal. I mean, they're doing it as well, if not better than anybody. And as long as you got Kiffin, and they've got the defense right. Yes, huge missed opportunity. You know, I'm probably in agreement with you. You know, if it was Ole Miss, man, could you imagine Ole Miss and Ohio State in the national championship with the Judkins storylines? I mean, I think short of Ohio State, I think Ole Miss could have beaten any team in the field. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Tell they couldn't even beat Kentucky. But
they crushed Georgia. I mean.
Right. I mean, I really think they could have played with anybody, but the fact they didn't even get there, maybe that's an indictment. Couldn't beat Florida, as Mr. Bassman would say. But I think they can do it. I really do. I wouldn't bet my mortgage on it, but I think they could put together a magical season because in this new era, the former programs like Ole Miss, I don't think they realistically had a shot. I think they do now because the teams at the top, they don't have the depth. They don't have the overall talent. I think Ole Miss could get it done if Lane Kiffin stays there.
Okay, you've convinced me. Now I'm going to change my vote here. So I could talk. I think I could get to a pretty optimistic place here because let's just say Austin Simmons is really good and he stays there for 2 or 3 years and he's better than Jackson Dart, and Jackson Dart was really good. And to Mike's point, you know, Pete Golding, the turnaround on defense, and that continues. And not only is it the, you know, recruiting classes from the last 2 years, stacking some depth, maybe you go out and you get the next Walter Nolan or the next, you know, Princely, and you add that number one transfer class that is that missing piece, maybe in 26 or 27. So, yeah, I'll switch my vote on that one. You convince me.
Yeah. All right. How about this one from The Figgler, Stephen? What would surprise you more about the Florida Gators next season? They go 6-6 or make the college football playoff? Which would surprise you more? And I hate to do it because I'm a big believer in Florida this year. I realistically think they can make the playoff. I really do. But would that surprise me more than going 6-6? I know I'm kind of contradicting myself here, but I really do I think making the playoff would surprise me more than 6-6 just because it's such a gauntlet that they're playing. And it, now maybe this doesn't make sense because similar to what you were saying earlier, Stephen, if they can beat LSU, if they can beat Miami, they can go on this run. Well, last year they were losing to those teams. Of course, switch out LSU for A&M. Losing to Miami, losing to A&M in embarrassing fashion, yet they rebounded and got it done. But, man, if I had to go one way or the other, and I think the Vegas over-under we talked about earlier, I mean, they're setting it at 6.5. So are you putting your mortgage on a 6.5 going to the college football playoff, or are you putting the mortgage on Florida to go 6-6? I think 6-6 is a safer bet. I don't like either one of them. I think they're realistically, I think they're closer to 8-4, 9-3, but taking that next step to 10-2 with this schedule, I think that is that's a little bit more unrealistic compared to going 6-6, perhaps.
This one's tough because it's almost like if Florida is 6-6, that feels very disappointing, even with a difficult schedule. Because let's assume DJ Lagway stays healthy, and we go back to last season, the improvement on defense. And so if those two things carry over into this year and you still finish 6-6, that would be pretty disappointing, I think. But also that schedule is so difficult. Not that they can't overcome it. I think they could. It's just that when you talk about playing at LSU, at Miami, I would put both those in the top 10, A&M. And also you're catching Ole Miss later in the season, which is probably where you don't want to get them. You probably prefer to get them earlier with all of the new pieces that they have. And the same thing for Tennessee. That doesn't even count the game against Georgia and Jacksonville. So it feels like if the 6-6 side is probably a little bit more realistic given that schedule.
Yeah. Which again, I'm not betting on it, but we had to go one way or the other there. How about this one, Stephen, from Jeez Louise? I think he's in the comments now. What a great name. What helps keep Brian Kelly around for another year more? Garrett Nussmeier balling out, or the defense finally stopping someone? Which is more realistic to keep Brian Kelly around for 2026, do you think?
That's another tough one. I mean, I think we have to assume like Nussmeier is going to kind of ball out anyways, right? Like, what's the level of play we're talking about here for Nussmeier? But I'm going to give Nussmeier sort of like a baseline of performance. Like, if you're just talking middle of the road quarterback in the SEC, and I think he's going to be better than that, mm-hmm. I would think it has to be the defense, right? Like, their defense has to get significantly better, just given the track record at LSU and given what they're paying Blake Baker and also what they've been able to do in the portal this year, plus in the freshman class to get better.
Yeah, I would go defense as well. That's where I'm leaning, because I think those that are not biased, it's weird. Some people, they're hating on Garrett Nussmeier now because now he's got these high Heisman odds. He's getting Stephen ranked him number 2 in the SEC, which I think is completely fair. But all of a sudden now we just attack the people that are atop the pyramid. You know what I mean? But I think we know that he's a very good quarterback. Yet they lost a bunch of games with him still being a good quarterback. And offensive lines being rebuilt, I like the pieces that they've added at tight end and receiver to surround him with. But I don't know that that you can just insert all these guys and they're going to click immediately. So I think the real answer, you know, it doesn't have to be all one or all the other. I think it's both. I think it's the defense gets better. I think Nussmeier, if he can glue this, you know, be the leader, be the coach on the field, as I've called him, if he can be that for the first half of the season, that it may take for some of these guys to come together and form a strong offense. That's the key for Brian Kelly coming back for another year and LSU having a big season. I think the truth is kind of both, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It feels like if Nussmeier does statistically what he did this year, and you know, his interception numbers could stand to be a little bit lower, but they gave up 26 points a game in SEC play last season. So it feels like if you can cut that total by a touchdown or 10 points and you stack Nussmeier's production in a similar statistical way, then I think you're talking a team that's definitely a playoff contender and probably should make it if that's the case. So, and like I said, I mean, given the resources that you're playing paying Blake Baker, you've got to see a bigger return on that in year two.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about this one, Steve? I love this question from Adam, the Internet Observer. What great. A name. Which team has the widest range of potential? And he means could be terrible or make a deep playoff or be a deep playoff contender. Hotty toddy, love the show. We appreciate you, Adam. I got two on my list, Stephen. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Number one, could be terrible, could make a deep playoff run. I don't think there's any better definition than Auburn Tigers. Yep. that's exact. I mean, I think Hugh Freeze could be fired by October 11th. You know, I don't think that's like highly unrealistic. I think they could be top five. I don't know, top five, but maybe like top eight team in the country. You know, like they're and I don't know that there's going to be anywhere in between. I think it's going to be spectacular or it's going to be an epic disaster.
I completely agree with you. As soon as you ended that question, the first team that came into my mind was Auburn, just because of the volatility. I mean, it kind of feels like for a long time that Auburn has been the team that's been like the biggest wild card at times. And they're so difficult to very volatile from year to year. And so I think just given the Hugh Freeze factor, given the fact they've added Jackson Arnold, and he's probably one of the biggest wild cards from a personnel standpoint, that you could look at this team and say they've got so much talent. They had some bad luck with turnovers. Things are bound to maybe bounce their way a little bit better this time. But what do you expect from the head coach, quarterback? How many times is he going to throw quarterback under the bus this year? They just feel like the team that has from 5-7 to playoff. Nothing would surprise me with this team.
And then I have one more that I'm not quite as confident that it could be a disaster or awesome, but kind of similar. How about this one, Steven? How about trying to find the heck's their schedule? Oh, here we go. Oklahoma. Because if John Mateer comes in and is amazing, if this offensive coordinator makes a huge impact, they shore up the offensive line. If the receivers hit, I mean, this is a lot of what ifs. But they just have to be, you know, like competent on offense. With the defense they're likely to field next year, I think Oklahoma could make a deep run. I think they could be the most underrated team in the conference. Or same thing I said about old Hugh. I mean, I think it's reasonable that let's say like Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Alabama all beat Oklahoma, and Venables is fired before the Missouri game. I mean, I would buy either one of those stories.
They would absolutely be the second team that I think of here. So we're thinking on the same page as far as like the teams with the widest variance here. I think a couple things for Oklahoma. I trust Brent Venables on the defensive side of the ball, and they have a ton of roster talent, just kind of like we talked about with the five-year average. But offensively, in SEC games last year, they were the lowest team in terms of production, 4.2 yards per play. That was worse than Kentucky. So they have a significant way to go on offense. But you know, like we've talked about, I think Mateer and Arbuckle give you a chance to sort of turn things around quickly because they're stepping in day one, same scheme. They can go in and replicate it. The only challenge is it's different in the Mountain West and Pac-12 than it is in the SEC, and it's a significant step up. And that's what's the wild card factor about this team is I don't really know what to make of them yet, because you know, watching Mateer at Washington State, he is so exciting and such a game breaker. But how does that translate to week in and week out against a very difficult schedule? They are going to be a fascinating team to watch. So everything you laid out there, I think, was perfect.
Now, those are the only two teams that I really considered. Is there anyone in the SEC that you would kind of throw into this consideration?
I think those are the two. I don't think like A&M does not strike me as like the floor seems to be like at least a bowl game. It doesn't seem like the bottom could completely fall out. I'm kind of having a hard time finding another, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the only two. And really, it's Auburn leading the pack by a wide margin, and then Oklahoma nipping at their heels, so to speak.
Ole Miss doesn't have the low floor, but I feel like their ceiling might be pretty high here. Like, if things hit right, I think, you know, at probably worst, you're probably like 7-5 and in a bowl game. And at best, if like the upside is probably as high as maybe we could think with Auburn and Oklahoma. It's just their floor is probably a lot better off.
Right. And I think a far more manageable schedule.
Yeah.
Of course, that was the narrative all last season. And I mean, they won 10 games. We shouldn't act like they didn't do anything, but just fell short of expectations, of course. All right. How about this one from Mizzou Mafia? Guess who we're going to talk about here, Stephen? With all the high-end transfers on the defensive side of the football, where roughly would you rank Missouri's defense in the SEC next season? And he didn't specifically give, what criteria he's talking about ranking. So I just kind of, this is kind of a cheap way of answering it perhaps, but I just, you know, let's put the defenses in like tiers. There's obviously an elite tier. There's a good tier. And I'll just say a average tier and a poor tier. I think Missouri has the potential to be in that second good tier as long as they hit on the majority of these transfers, which they have done a remarkable job of managing the portal. So I think that's kind of the high end for Missouri's defense next year.
I agree with that. So I was, you know, just thinking about their transfer class. I love the pickup of Damon Wilson from Georgia. You also add in Jalen Catalone, who's played for like a billion schools now back in the SEC at Missouri. I really like what Missouri has done in the portal. I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, like who are the best defenses in the SEC next year? And I probably would go, you have to put Texas in there because I think Kwiatkowski will figure it out. Georgia, Alabama, I mean, probably like Tennessee, Oklahoma, A&M, and Missouri, probably all in that second tier, maybe. I might be forgetting somebody too.
Yeah, I think for me right now, I think Alabama with what they have back in the continuity, I think that they kind of lead the way. That them in Georgia, you never in Texas, but I think as long as Kirby's there, we're going to count on them having a really elite level defense, and probably the same with Texas. So those are the teams. South Carolina made a huge jump. Now they got some big pieces that are off now, off to the NFL. Ole Miss was really dynamic. I think Ole Miss, apologies if you said that one, I think they should be thrown into that conversation. And we've already kind of talked about it, but for Brian Kelly's sake, LSU better be close to the good tier. Otherwise, this may be his last year.
Also throw Florida, probably. I mean, I know we're mentioning a ton of teams here, but Florida's performance down the stretch, especially in November. What does Auburn, Auburn's got a solid core coming back, plus the transfers. You could see that group being in that second tier as well. So there's really not, I guess that's the kind of takeaways. There's not a ton of like bad defenses on paper here. Like Kentucky's losing a lot. You also kind of trust Mark Stoops and Brad White to kind of figure it out too. And you kind of trust Clark Lee on defense to get better next season too.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about this one, Stephen? I thought this was an interesting question. I don't know if he already knew the answer. I don't think he did. But shout out Sooner in the South. What teams have the most offensive line production coming back coupled with a quarterback who started 10 or more games last year? And there's not really any, which I thought was fascinating. I mean, I shouldn't say any, but here's the offensive line returning snaps. And the one that stands out, again, his question is, quarterback that started 10 or more games, you really have to go all the way down to Taylen Green. With they have 57% of their offensive line returning, because all the rest, A&M with Marcel Reed, who we like, but he didn't start 10 games. Jackson Arnold, not even at Oklahoma, now at Auburn, didn't start 10 games, I don't believe, because he got benched. DJ Lagway could be out of this world, but he didn't start 10 games. Oklahoma, maybe that's why he's asking that, because John Battier technically, I guess, but not at Oklahoma. He did at Washington State start a bunch of games, so maybe that's why he's asking this question. But maybe that gives you even more hope if you're an Oklahoma fan that you could be there. But it's really just Arkansas, South Carolina with Sellers, and that's about it. Which again, I don't know how much this metric really matters, but what's your takeaway from the fact that there's so few teams with a ton of offensive line coming back coupled with a quarterback that started 10 or more games last year?
I think it just adds to kind of the feeling that I have that somebody in that second, maybe middle tier of the SEC is going to surprise this year. And maybe that's like, maybe that's South Carolina. They're going to be picked 10 to 15. I'm not saying win the conference, but I'm saying get in the playoff. But also when I look at those teams, the offensive line production at the top, it kind of reinforces this idea because you could easily see Barcel Reed takes a step forward, better receivers, great offensive line. That translates into a couple more victories this year. Auburn, kind of ready-made for Jackson Arnold to step in. And if he can play better, he elevates that offense. Like Florida, DJ Lagway, kind of having that strong supporting cast around a rising star at quarterback. For Oklahoma, I think you could also look at that and look, kind of think optimism here. Like Mateer, Arbuckle, they're getting Deion Burks back at receiver. They're got some experience coming back on the offensive line too. So those two things could easily translate into improvement. So I think if nothing else, those numbers sort of can give you some optimism if you're some of those teams at the top, but also in that second tier, like with Georgia, with Texas, LSU replacing so many guys, that also spells like opportunity for me for some of those teams at the top.
Mm. All right. Final question here from Cousin Trey. He always asks outstanding questions and he's always asked a double question here, Stephen. It's a football question. And then we'll get to the food question here. What is the floor and the ceiling for Georgia, Texas, and Ole Miss if their quarterbacks have great seasons? What's the floor or ceiling? And what if their quarterbacks have below than average ceilings? What's the floor and what's the ceiling? So I said Georgia and Texas, if they have great quarterback play, I mean, I think this is kind of obvious, but I think they could win the whole, they could win the national championship. Would you agree with that?
Agree. I would, that's what I, the ceiling should be. Yeah.
And then I said Ole Miss, if they have great quarterback play, I think their ceiling is to make the college football playoff. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say make the playoff, but also probably win a game or two. I think if you're good enough at quarterback or elite enough at quarterback, I think that carries you for one of those wins.
Mm-hmm. And then if they're below than average, if Texas and so let's say Gunner, and it may not be Gunner, maybe it's somebody else, and then obviously Arch Manning. I can't imagine, you know, Steven loves Arch, but I can't believe they're below average. But let's say in this world they are, what's their floor? I said each of those still, even with below average quarterback play, I think the floor is probably 9-3.
I would go with that too. I think either 9-3 or beat in the first round of the playoffs, kind of like Tennessee was this year, you know, mm-hmm. just one and done.
Right, right. And then Ole Miss with a below average quarterback. I think this just speaks to what Kiffin's built and the fact that they're getting better on defense. And quite honestly, they've always had a really good running game. They were not elite this year on the ground, but I said with a below average quarterback, I think Ole Miss is still probably a 8-4 team. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say 7-5, 8-4, like Citrus Bowl, ReliaQuest Bowl, good. And I think to your point, that's kind of, you know, I think maybe under another coaching staff, we would expect them to go, like the floor would be a lot lower, but I think you're just kind of expecting them that they'll figure it out. They'll get to a bowl game. Maybe quarterback play isn't great, but defense, running game can kind of elevate them. Kind of speaks to the job that Kiffin has done.
Mm-hmm. And then here's the second part. Again, Trey always asks food questions, Stephen. If you go to a feast, you only can pick one. You want ribeye or filet mignon? Which way would you go there?
Let's go ribeye.
Mm, yeah, I've always been a filet guy, but here the last couple of years, I've turned my back on the filets. That's too fancy. Give me the ribeye. It's good to get that fat in there too. You can't just be getting nothing but meat. So I'm right there with you, ribeye. How about baked potato or au gratin? I don't even know what that is. So I got to go baked potato.
Baked potato. I'll load it up with butter and everything else.
All right, pork and beans or asparagus? I mean, that seems pretty easy. I'm going pork and beans.
Yeah, same here.
Mm-hmm. I don't even think Cousin Shane's ever eaten an asparagus. He's like Jeremy Pruitt. Yeah. He doesn't know what that is. Bread pudding or creme brulee? That is too French, too fancy for me. Give me bread pudding.
Yeah, I'll go with bread pudding too.
Oh, so yeah. You hesitated. Are you a creme brulee man?
Mike, the high end for me is like the Chili's three for me. this is like top of the line, like only get it like once a year type stuff. So I'll go with bread pudding.
Okay. And then one of the nastiest things ever, black jelly beans. I don't know if you've ever had that.
Or
cotton candy. I'm not a fan of either, but cotton candy, 100 out of 100 over black jelly beans.
Yeah, I got to go cotton candy too. Reese's peanut butter cups, 100 out of 100 times over cotton candy, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, all right. Hey, that's all we got on the latest mailbag show. First time Stephen and I have ever done this. So appreciate you, Stephen. You know, I didn't send him any of the questions in advance, so I wanted him to be thinking on his feet. How do you feel that you survived your first mailbag show?
I think I did okay. Maybe better than the quarterback rankings were.
Significantly better than the quarterback rankings, just based on the comments alone.
Well, I enjoyed filling in for Cousin Shane. I'm not as an expert on the food questions as he has, but appreciate all the cousins hanging out, and I had a good time. Thanks for letting me fill in this week.
Yeah, and I don't know that you're aware of this yet, Stephen, but I believe we'll see you before we even see Cousin Shane again. Because I'm not 100% sure when Shane will be back. I think he'll be back by Sunday. But we got the Super Bowl, so we're going to take that off. Stephen and I, as long as Stephen's schedule permits, we'll be back on Monday. And then Cousin Shane, he'll be back on Tuesday, as per usual. And then we got more shows coming throughout the weekend. But just letting you know, Stephen, you're not off the hook just yet. Because Cousin Shane's in Orlando, drinking, having the time of his life. We're going to need you to step in one more time before officially gets back.
Oh, man, I am rested and ready. I have been working on the Athlon Sports College Football Magazine, so I am, you know, sort of just like engulfed in nothing but college football right now. So I think next week's show on Monday might also be very high in the rage meter, too, if the rumor mill is true.
Yep, no doubt. Well, all right, Stephen, thank you again so much. Before you go, as always, remind the cousins, how can they follow you? How can they find your work?
Absolutely. You can check out all my work at athlonsports.com. You can follow me over on Twitter at @AthlonSteven and StephenLCFB over on Facebook and Instagram.
All right, thanks again, Stephen, for filling in. Thank you to each and every one of you for checking us out. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.